Hi, this is John Harch. Welcome to episode 39 of Keep On Grooving. This time out, we'll take a look at the August section of the 1967 U.S. Summer Tour. The stint with the Monkees ended abruptly, so the band had to take what they could when they could find it. This ended up with them on the ticket with their old friends from Monterey, the Mamas and the Papas. Luckily for us, a local radio station was there and the show ended up being recorded. That tape gives us the latest Hendrix release live at the Hollywood Bowl, August 18, 1967. Oh, yeah, and Jimmy went back into the studio with Curtis Knight and Ed Chalpin and gave us another album title. Episode 39, the U.S. Summer Tour, August 1967, and live at the Hollywood Bowl, August 18, 1967. It must have been a pretty odd time for the Jimi Hendrix experience that summer of 67 in the U.S. In the U.K., they were superstars. In the U.S., they had two records out. The band had been signed to Reprise, who echoed their U.K. strategy and released Hey Joe, with 51st anniversary, as a B-side back in May. It touched on the bottom part of the top 100 chart, then left without a trace. I also think that Reprise having released 51st anniversary oddly led to its practically forgotten status here until the late 80s. So after they made their splash at Monterey, they did yeoman's work playing where they could. They knew the Monkees shows were a mismatch, but did their best. After a break at the end of July, it was time to reset things in August. One of the problems we have is since they were relative unknowns, there aren't a lot of recordings from this era to judge what people were hearing. We don't even have a lot of set lists to try to go off of. Ultimate Hendrix doesn't have anything after Monterey until they return to the UK in terms of set lists. There's a great site called appropriatelyenoughsetlist.com, but they're not infallible. A lot of time they have to go off of people's memories. For the shows after Monterey, they had two full set lists. One was for the festival in New York they played on July 5th. The set they have is Purple Haze, Hey Joe, Like a Rolling Stone, The Wind Cries Mary, I Don't Live Today, Foxy Lady, and Wild Thing. Most of them were performed at Monterey, and I Don't Live Today was occasionally done in Europe in the spring, so this looks reasonable. The other one they have is the final show at the Cafe Agogo on July 23rd. They have Sgt. Pepper's, Purple Haze, Wind Cries Mary, Hey Joe, Third Stone from the Sun, Manic Depression, Foxy Lady, Are You Experienced, Like a Rolling Stone, I Don't Live Today, and Fire. This one's a little trickier. All these songs were either on the Are You Experienced album or known to have been played previously. Third Stone was not often performed live, but had been played a few times in Europe, so that's not out of the question. Manic Depression and Are You Experienced were done more often in 1968, especially the title track, but a small club tryout is not out of the question. So this one's a little more iffy, but nothing to completely rule out. However, for the Monkees shows, they list two three-song sets. For the first show in Jacksonville, they list Hey Joe, Wild Thing, and All on the Watchtower. Now, I'm throwing the red flag on this one. Not only had All on the Watchtower not been released, Dylan hadn't even recorded it yet. Yes, he'd been doing the basement tapes, which had trickled out here and there, but Watchtower wasn't one of those songs. So don't pay any attention to this one. The other one they have is for Greensboro, North Carolina. They list Fire, Purple Haze, and Crosstown Traffic. Again, they list a song that didn't exist yet. Crosstown Traffic wasn't even conceived until December during the sessions at Olympic. If they gave the set as Fire, Hey Joe, Purple Haze, and Wild Thing, that would be a believable set for the opening act. So, just like Abe Lincoln said, don't believe everything you see on the internet. For the first week of August, the Experience played the Salvation Club in New York City, then would head down to D.C. for a five-night stand at the Ambassador Theater. Before they left, Jimmy went to hang out with Curtis Knight again. This time, instead of just jamming, they work on an actual song, Gloomy Monday. It was at this point Jimmy felt it necessary to bring up a certain matter with Ed Chalpin. As I've mentioned before, if there had been a big dramatic trial for the whole PPX contract issue, this would have been the aha moment. Experience Hendrix, to their credit, released it as the title track for the first volume of their PPX CDs, You Can't Use My Name. Now, because of all the copyright issues with podcasts, I can't include that track here. But what I can do is perform a dramatic recreation reading the script as listed in Ultimate Hendrix. I'll do Jimmy, Curtis Knight, and in the booth, Ed Chalpin. Okay, look, like, you can't, you know, like, when we do this thing, you can't put my name on the single. No, hell no. Okay? You got it. Rolling. Edward, can you hear me? I hear you. In other words, you know, you can't use my name for none of this stuff, though, right? I can hear you now that I'm rolling. You can't use his name on any of this. Oh, no, don't worry about it. No, but... No, seriously, though, you know? Like I said, don't worry about it, huh? I won't use it, don't worry. 3 days later, on August 11th, a new single by Jimi Hendrix hits the stores in the UK. But it wasn't burning a midnight lamp. Chaz was in the studio that day doing the mastering for the single to be released the following week. Boy, August 18th would be a busy day. The one that came out was How Would You Feel and You Don't Want Me, credited to Jimi Hendrix and Curtis Knight. These were two of the songs the Squires recorded in 1965, with How Would You Feel having a number of previous releases. The night Jimmy was recording with Curtis, London Records A&R man Dick Rowe was also there to get a hold of a couple master tapes from Chalpin to release as a single over in the UK. Rowe was one of the people Chandler approached when trying to sign Jimmy, but was turned down cold. Rowe had earlier also passed on some bar band from Liverpool, so when he heard he could still get a piece of Hendrix, he jumped on it. The song didn't hit the charts, but it did set a pattern we'd come to see a lot before the year was out. Meanwhile, the band really didn't have much going on. After the DC run ended, they flew up to that music mecca in Michigan. No, not Motown, Ann Arbor. They did a couple shows at a place called the Fifth Dimension Club. With the single coming out in the UK the following week, they'd return overseas to do promotion for it. They wanted to make some kind of splash on the way out, and as luck would have it, exactly 2 months to the day they hit the stage at Monterey, they'd return to California at a prestigious site. The Hollywood Bowl was one of the go-to places in the Los Angeles area for musical performances since the 1920s. It's an open-air amphitheater with a very distinctive-looking acoustical shell. It was so popular, it even had its own orchestra, led by the famed conductor Leopold Stokowski. It has been rumored that during a late 40s performance by opera star Giovanni Jones, that Leopold was impersonated by, of all things, a rabbit. This incident will be discussed in an upcoming episode of my YouTube series, Left Turn at Albuquerque. Look for it in episode 5. By the 1960s, rock and roll acts began to play there regularly. They even got the biggest name in the business, the Beatles, to play there in 1964 and 1965, which yielded a live album released in 1977. A Supreme show in 1967 was the first time Cindy Birdsong stepped in for Florence Ballard, so it was a natural place for California bands to play. The Doors famously did so a year later, that yielded a live album in the 1980s, then again in 2012 for the whole show. On August 18th, 1967, the Mamas and the Papas were the headliners, and the Jimi Hendrix Experience would be the opener. Oddly enough, this was also the exact same order they'd appeared together at Monterey Pop. Luckily for all of us, the local radio station, KHJ, was there that night, and the show ended up being recorded. More on that in a minute. The set has the same number of songs as Monterey, 9. Two-thirds of them are the same as the earlier show, 3 of them are different. The band started with one of their regular openers, Sgt. Pepper's. Looks like they'd been doing it since around June 4th at the Savile Theater in London. Right, Paul? wonder if he'll tell that story again. This is the full version of their arrangement of the song. It does the two verses along with a solo in the middle section, but leaves out the chorus and bridge sections, so it comes in around a minute 45. I have to say this is among the best versions I've heard of them doing it. I guess it was still fresh and they put a lot of enthusiasm into it. I get why they didn't do it at Monterey. They kind of needed to establish their own identity without playing off of a band slightly more popular than just about everybody else there. Killing Floor was next. It's very similar to the Monterey version, but with a bit of a sound collage intro before the song starts. There's a little less distortion in the sound compared to the earlier version. I guess it's a matter of equipment setup. The Wind Cries Mary was next, very similar to the Monterey version. This was one of those songs that didn't call for improvisation. Just do the song as it was on the record. Yeah, he flubs a couple lines in the second verse, but what are you going to do? Foxy Lady followed, again very similar to the Monterey version, but this time he does the second string vibration right before the finale. I'd say that this one is even better than Monterey, compact, hard-hitting, just nailing all the right notes. Next up was Catfish Blues, the band's arrangement of Muddy Waters' Rolling Stone, which was derived from an earlier song called Catfish Blues. It also has the verse from Muddy Waters' Still a Fool, aka Two Trains Running. Then a non-muddy finale of Cat Squirrel and a snippet of Spoonful at the end. Since our set list knowledge of most of 1967 is a little limited, it's not known exactly when they started playing Catfish Blues, or experiencing the blues as they later call it, as a part of their regular set. We do have it on a tape that was recorded at the Flamingo Club in London in early February, so it's at least as old as that. By October, it was in regular rotation as they played it on the BBC and at the Paris Olympia, and in November on the Dutch show Hepla. That's the one that's on the blues album. The solo on this one is pretty awesome, and we get the first taste live of Jimmy using a wah-wah pedal. Now, I don't know when he started using it live, but this is the first recorded instance of it. Fire was up next. Now, despite its later reputation and prominent part in later shows, this wasn't a big one in the early set list. They did it a few times in March, right around the time it was recorded, and it made its appearance on the BBC that month. This version shows why it still needed a little work on the performance side. Jimmy and Noel's vocal trading wasn't quite timed right, like they were singing at two different tempos. This may be why on some occasions later, they didn't even sing the chorus, they just played. Then it was on to the Bob Dylan portion of our show with their cover of Like a Rolling Stone. Funny, they were performing it right as the Squires version was getting reissued in the UK. What makes this particular version unique is the third verse is the song's actual third verse. Remember at Monterey after the solo, Jimmy does the final verse of the song and tells everyone, yes, I know I miss a verse, don't worry about it. This time, he does the verse with the Siamese cat, does the chorus, does a little solo, does the chorus again, then ends the song. For some reason, Jimmy only ever did three of the song's four verses, just the different combinations. I understand why they did three here. Like at Monterey, they're on a timer source. They only had 45 minutes before they had to head off. But a year later at Winterland, he did the missing verse during one of the versions there, but didn't finish the song. He could have spent another minute or two on it. Wouldn't have taken up too much time. The traditional set closers for this stage of their career sorted themselves out pretty early. Purple Haze was just a natural near the end of the set song. Oddly enough, their American label thought it was the perfect opener, but more on that in a minute. By the next year, it moved itself into the set closing position before getting bumped back to the penultimate slot again by Voodoo Child. Since Hey Joe was not in the set that night, he played part of the song's final solo with his teeth. Then, as at Monterey, Wild Thing ended the set as the English-American combined anthem. Now, I wish Jimmy took a little moment like he did at the show 2 months earlier to tune up right before going into the Trogs cover. I may be exaggerating a little bit, but I think Monterey is practically the only time he pretty much was in tune when going into the song's opening chords. Just about every other time he hits those first chords, and you can immediately tell at least one string is out of tune. Sometimes, like Royal Albert Hall, it's really out of tune. This one is just mildly out of tune, but discernibly so. The intro is shorter than the earlier one. It bears more of a resemblance to the type of intros he'd do when Purple Haze was a set closer, or for Are You Experienced when that song was played. Have to come right out and say it, sound is only okay. It seemed the guy doing the sound for the radio station recorded the show on his own, so it wasn't exactly a Wally Heider multi-track setup. Frankly, this is the kind of thing, if you get it as a bootleg, you'd be like, wow, this sounds great. Maybe they should have got Peter Jackson on the phone and see if he could have done that thing that they've done with Now and Then. Maybe pull things apart and play with them a little bit, but is what it is. But the fact it exists is the main thing to celebrate here. It's not quite as much of a missing piece like Woburn, where you can hear how Jimmy used to sound becoming how he was going to sound. This is more of a slow evolution. There's still the Monterey style in there, but you could hear the kind of playing he'd be doing at the Paris Olympia in October starting to take form. The album includes a booklet with a lot of pictures and an essay by Jeff Slate that has a bunch of quotes from the only surviving person who was on stage that night, Michelle Phillips. She was also a large part of the mini-documentary experience Hendrix put up on YouTube when the album was announced, From Monterey Pop to the Hollywood Bowl, very well done for a 10-minute short. They also recently did one with Mickey Dolenz, imaginatively titled From the Monkees to the Hollywood Bowl. They probably need to edit those two together and make From Monterey to the Monkees to the Hollywood Bowl. So this is definitely recommended for a download or for a $10 or $12 CD. I'm going to have to hear other people's reactions to the vinyl and see whether it's worth that amount of money for what this is. As for the band, after one more show the next night in Santa Barbara, they returned to England to begin promoting the new single, Burning of the Midnight Lamp. And of course, just as that happened, Reprise finally got around to releasing Are You Experienced in the United States. Noel even mentioned it during the show was coming out soon. As we went over back in episode 19, this wasn't the same Are You Experienced as was released in the UK. To present a clearer picture of the band to US audiences, they decided to add in their three singles, Hey Joe, Purple Haze, and The Wind Cries Mary, onto the album. But to accommodate that, they picked three songs to remove. They decided on Can You See Me, Remember, and Red House. Can You See Me was a part of their live shows quite a bit, but it was also similar to the next song in the album, Lover Confusion. That song is a little more interesting in terms of musical progression and lyrically, so I can understand holding Can You See Me back. Remember, let's face it, isn't the most representative of the band's sound, plus they had May This Be Love already on there, plus adding another slow song with When Cries Mary, so I can also understand this one. The tough one was Red House. Jimmy loved the blues and was proud he came up with something that might have been able to stand up next to classics by Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf. But I guess from the label's point of view, they were looking for the more interesting tracks. Of the songs they were looking to add, it was probably the most similar to Hey Joe in terms of simplicity, so they swapped out these two tracks. Then things get trickier. They added Purple Haze as the opening track, but moved Foxy Lady to the next to last track on Side 2 in place of Remember. Then they put Wind Cries Mary at the beginning of Side 2 in place of May This Be Love. They moved that song to Side 1, but instead of just swapping it with Can You See Me, they moved Lover Confusion up one slot, then put May This Be Love next to last on Side 1. So as you can see, they actually put a lot of thought into this. They didn't just pull three songs off and replace them. They arranged the song so it had a good flow and touched on several facets of the band's sound. And I know it bugs my friends overseas a bit, but I like the flow of the Reprise version better than the original. I wonder if Reprise putting Purple Haze first on this version helped inspire Track to put it first on Smash Hits in April 1968. Nowadays, we don't have the time constraints anymore, and you can make up a version with anywhere from 11 to 17 songs and arrange them however you want. So that's it for the summer tour. When we come back after the holidays, we'll probably head into the European tour in early 1969 and talk about Royal Albert Hall as well. Maybe they'll even give us an announcement for it. I highly doubt it, but you never know these days. Next time, it's the return of the annual tradition, the Keep On Grooving Holiday Special. This year, we'll add our ideas of the best videos to give to the Hendrix fan on your list. That'll be next time on Keep On Grooving. Please hit the subscribe button if you like what you're hearing. I'm Don Hartshorn. Thanks for listening.